Today's daf is daf lamed aleph. We'll start here on daf lamed amud beis on the last line v'hadis sanya. And the Gemara now is going to try to explain a machlokas between the Rabbanon and Rabbi Yehuda. And that machlokas revolves around the question of oil zoruk. We said that if you have an oil which is in motion, that's going to be a major controversy whether or not it's considered an oil and it's chotzeis b'fnei atuma or it's not considered an oil. And here we start the daf for today. Daf lamed aleph amud aleph. Ma'arvin l'kohen tahor b'truma tahora b'kever. He can place his eruv on the kever. And this price is coming to teach us that even though he has truma tahora, which if it becomes tame, the kohen is not allowed to eat it. Nevertheless, he could be ma'ariv ba with this truma tahora in a way that it won't be mekamel tuma, as the Gemara is going to explain that there's a possibility of having the truma tahora on the kever. We're no longer talking about a beis hakvaros now. We're talking about a single kever. And Rabbi Yehuda mentions and emphasizes that it's truma tahora because again, truma tmeya is not ru'i l'achila. It's not suitable for eating, and therefore it could not possibly be a valid eruv. So we're now on the top of Daf, Lamed Aleph, Amud Aleph, and the Gemara says the following. We don't understand how it's possible to set up an Erev on a Kever on behalf of a Kohen, because L'chora, the food, the Mazon, Shtei Sudos, that he places on the Kever for the purpose of an Erev has to be accessible to him. And in this case, it has to be accessible to him in such a way that he can grab onto the food without becoming tummy. And the problem is, as soon as he goes for the kli, he is going to be mile ala mes, ala kever. He's already, part of his body is over the kever in order to get access to the mazon shtei sudo. So he's going to contract tuma, and a kohen tomei is not allowed to eat truma tmeya. So there's no way that we can set it up in such a way that he, the kohen who set up this eruv on the kever, could get access to his food. Heichi ozil. So Gemara asks, how is this kohen going to get access to the eruv? And if you'll tell me, b'shida teva umigdal, fine. These are Oholim that could be chotzeis b'fnei atuma, and now we're assuming that ol zorek shmei ohel, even though it's on the move, this yol is still a valid ol, and it is a chotzeis b'fnei atuma. For keva di achta, it mayole. I don't understand. The moment that he places the truma down on the kever, the truma itself became tame. So even if it's possible for the kohen to get access to this kever by placing himself inside an ohel, a shida tevo migdal, but nevertheless, the moment that the truma is placed down on the kever, the truma will contract tuma. And once the truma becomes truma tmeya, then you're not allowed to eat truma tmeya. In fact, a kohen who eats truma tmeya, or for that matter, a kohen tamei who eats truma tahora, and either way, violates a very severe law. So how is he, I can understand how he gets close to the kever without himself contracting tuma. And that's through a shida tivo migdal. But what I don't understand, says the Gemara, is how is he going to grab onto the food and assume that this food is still tar when the food is placed on the kever? And the Gemara answers that not every food contracts tuma. We need what's called hechsher lekabel tuma. The Torah says in Vayikra, chapter 11, Mikol ha'ochel asher yochel asher yavo olav mayim yitma. And the Gemara establishes in Chulin Lamed Vav that this means that ochel, foodstuff, is not mekabel tuma until it comes in contact with water or any of the other six mashkim, which include tal, mayim, yayin, shemen, dam, cholav, udvash. Yad, shachat, dam are the Rashi Tevis. And shalo hukshara, that we're talking about a case where this truma was absolutely dry. It had never come in contact with liquids, any of the sheva mashkim. Oh, the Gemara gives another alternative. Maybe he set up a pas, a loaf of bread for his Erev on the kever. How is it that the loaf of bread is not contracting tumah? The answer is nilosha b'mei peros. That instead of using water together with the flour in order to create the dough, he used mei peros. Let's say he used, for example, the liquids of rimonim or tusim, different kinds of berries and so forth, which are not one of the sheva mashkim. So once again, this truma lo hukshra lekabel tuma. So the truma does not contract tuma, and therefore the kohen is allowed to eat it. Now the Gemara raises another question. But hechi maisile, as we said before, in order for this erev to be valid, the food has to be accessible to the kohen in such a way that he could grab onto the food where it was set up as an erev and he could eat it. But one second, how is he going to grab onto the food? How is he going to bring the food to him? Because the moment he grabs onto the food, he himself is mahil al hakever. He himself is wavering over the kever. And a kever is metame all the way up to the rakia. And therefore he will contract tumah, and even if the truma itself remains truma tahora, but a kohen tameh who eats truma tahora is chayv misa b'dei shamayim. It cannot be considered roi l'su'uda, and how could the Erev possibly, according to Rabbi Yehuda the Braisa, be valid? Now you and I might have asked the following question. Maybe the kohen could send a Yisrael who's allowed to become tameh, and he could grab onto the truma from the kever and then give it over to the kohen so the kohen could eat it. And the truma did not contract tuma because it was lo hukshar. It didn't come in contact with liquids. But the answer is that Rabbi Yehuda in this braisa holds like sumchus. Yesterday we learned about sumchus. Sumchus holds that the eruv, in order to be valid, has to be royal ma'ariv atzmo. It has to be accessible directly to the ma'arev, to the one who for whom the erev is valid. He can't send a shliach and say, well, I have access to eat this erev through a shliach. He has to be able to at least potentially access the truma, or the erev, himself. And therefore, the ma'arev has to be able to eat the erev by himself. And that's not going to be possible since the Kohen, in this case, is going to be ma'ahil ala kever. In order to get the food that's on top of the kever, he's going to have to go over the kever. So the Gemara answers, and I'll just give a little introduction to the Gemara's answer, that he's not going to actually grab onto the food that's designated as an erev, but rather he's going to take a kli, and this kli has a long handle. He's going to hold on to one side of the handle, and the other side of the handle is going to be like a large spoon, so to speak, to grab onto the truma, to this eruv, and bring it to him. So he's not physically over the kever. Ah, but the Gemara says that's not going to be good either, because we have to set it up in such a way that the kli that he is going to use to stretch over the kever in order to access the truma, the eruv, is not going to be makabel tuma. Because if the kli is makabel tuma, then that tuma is what's called an ava tuma, and that's going to be metame the kohen who's holding on to the other side of the kli. So what we need now to accomplish is not only, number one, that the kohen is not mahil ala kever, but we also need to guarantee that the kli itself will not be makabel tumah. Now, if he takes this kli and he scoops up the eruv from on top of the kever, then the kli is going to be makabel tumah. So the Gemara answers, b'pshutei kli eitz delo makabli tumah. We have in the parsha of Tuma a concept called Kli Eitz. Kli Eitz, if it has no base kibble, that's called Pshute Kli Eitz. It's a flat Kli, it doesn't have a receptacle, then it's not Dumya Desak. And in the parsha of Kabbalah's Tuma, the Torah says, as codified by the Mishnah in Masechta Kelim, that you need something Dumya Desak. And Pshute Kli Eitz is not Dumya Desak. So therefore, the Kli itself will not be Mekabel Tuma. Okay, fine, the Kli is not Mekabel Tuma. And what happens now? So the Gemara says, I'm still not out in the clear. Why? V'haka mahil. Even if the Kli itself, which is Pshute Kli Eitz, is not going to contract Tuma from the Kever, but nevertheless, the Kli itself is mahil alamis. The Kli itself hovers over the Kever. And therefore, the Kohen is going to contract Tumah. Why? Because the Kohen is now, so to speak, underneath the Kli. Why? Because he's grabbing hold of the handle of the Kli. So his hand is located underneath the Kli. The Kli itself is Ma'al Alames. And therefore, even though the Kli itself doesn't contract Tumah, it will be a vehicle, a conduit, to convey Tumah to the Kohen who's holding on to the Kli. Why? Because the Kli is Mayel ala Kever. He, the Kohen, is holding on to the Kli from the underside. And now, the Kli itself, as a Mayel, is being Mayel on two things. Not only on the Kever, but also on the Kohen, on the Adam himself. And the Gemara says that Maisi la achode, that he takes the Truma towards him with a Kli that has achode. Achode means it has a very narrow end to it. So the end of the Kli, in my mind I imagine something like a pitchfork. You know, he pierces into the Truma, into the Ochel. But the main point is that this Kli has a narrow ending that's less than what's called a Hekev Tefach. The halacha is that only something could be ma'il alames if it could serve as an ohel, and the minimum shear of an ohel is a tefa. So the Gemara now is so excited about this scenario. We hachi mai taima d'rabbanan. So what was the svara of the chachamim who argued against Rabbi Yehuda, and they hold that ema arvin l'koin b'truma tahora? There's no way that you could be ma'ariv on a kever by placing the Erev of Truma Tahora on top of a Kever. Again, if the Truma is in a Beis HaKvaros, then the Chachamim hold there's no way that the Kohen could enter into the Beis HaKvaros, because the Chachamim hold that even if the Kohen would enter into a Shida with a Shida Tevu Migdal, according to Chachamim, Oel Zorak, Lav Shmei Oel, and therefore the Oel itself could not be a Chatzitza. But now, we're talking about one single kever, and the Kohen placed his Truma Tahora on top of the kever. He doesn't have to go into a Beis HaKvaros with a Shida Tevu Migdal. All he has to do is get access to the Truma by holding on to this Kli that has Chudo less than a Rochav of a Tefach. Therefore, the Kli is not Mayel. And the Kli itself is Pshute Kli Eitz, and it won't be Mekabel Tumah. It's not even Mayel Alames, because it doesn't have the shear of a tefach. So why did the Rabbanan disagree? Why couldn't they validate this Eruv? And the Gemara answers, Kasavri, the Chacham hold, Osur Liknos Bayis Bisurei Ano. The whole issue here is a totally different issue. And that is that there's an Isur Hano. You're not allowed to benefit from anything that is part of the mess, like, for example, the bgadim that the mess is wearing, the tachrichim, and the kever. All this is asur bano. Now, when a person puts his erev on top of a kever, and his goal is now to be konesh visa, 2,000 amma outside of his house, so that he can go another 2,000 amma on Shabbos, he's benefiting from the kever. The kever is holding on, so to speak, is carrying his Eruv, and the Eruv is Osur Bano. Although, again, I have to admit that Isur Hano is only Darbanon, but nevertheless, it's enough to undermine the Eruv, because if Darbanon say you're not allowed to benefit from the Kever, then by enjoying the benefit of this Eruv, which is held up by the kever, he is indirectly benefiting from the kever. Michlal, should we therefore assume by implication that Rabbi Yehuda Savar Mutar, that Rabbi Yehuda holds that you're allowed to enjoy the benefit of a kever? And the Gemara assumes that that's an impossible position because everybody agrees and embraces this fundamental principle that there's an Iser Hanoah from a kever. And the Gemara answers, Kosovar mitzvot slav lehenos nitnu. When a person benefits for the purpose of not for the purpose of his own benefit, but rather for the purpose of a mitzvah, the halacha doesn't recognize that hanoah as hanoah. The Iser Hanoah is only an Iser Hanoah that's not for the purpose of a mitzvah. Here he made an Eruv, and we're going to soon see that the reason he made the Eruv is because he wants to get another 2,000 Amma beyond the city boundaries, the limits, in order to be Makabel, in order to participate in a Beis HaMishteh and a Simcha, in order to participate in a Beis Ovel, be Menachem Avelim. All this is for the sake of a mitzvah. So any benefit he gets from the Eruv is a mitzvah benefit. And mitzvah slav lehenos nitna. So the Gemara says, Alahod Yomar Rava, mitzvah slav lehenos nitna, lemeketanoi amur lishmaite. And Rava, who was the famous person back in Masechta Rosh Hashanah, Daf Chav Ches, who formulated the halacha that mitzvah slav lehenos nitna. Therefore, if you blow a shofar in Rosh Hashanah with Isurei Hanah, like for example, the shofar was taken off the head of a carbon ola, then even though the shofar is also banoi, he's allowed to blow it and fulfill his mitzvah of shofar with Isurei Hanah, because mitzvah slav lehenos nitnu. Should we say that Rava really is entering into a minefield, and his principle depends upon the machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim, Amalecha Rava, Isvir Leiti Ein Ma'arvin Ela Lidvar Mitzvah Dekuli Alma Mitzvah Slav Lehenos Nitnu? If it was a simple, universally accepted principle that you can only set up an Eruv to allow you an extra 2,000 amma if you are doing so for the sake of a mitzvah, then everybody would agree to Rabbi Yehuda, because mitzvah slav lehenos nitnu was never an issue. Certainly, even the Chachom agreed that mitzvah slav lehenos nitnu v'hacha, v'hacha miflegi. Why is it that the Rabbanan disagree with Rabbi Yehuda? Mar sova Rabbi Yehuda holds ein ba'arvin elu dvar mitzvah. Mar sova ma'arvin afilu dvar v'shus. For example, if I want to go beyond the 2,000 amma, I want to go 4,000 amma on Shabbos for whatever purpose. Maybe I want to look at my fields and see how they're doing. I own some fields, property out there. That's Lidvar Rishus. According to Chachamim, you're allowed to set up an Erev Tchumen. And therefore, there's no L'shem Mitzvah. And if the Erev is on a Kever in such a way that he's benefiting from Yisuri Anah, then he's not allowed to use that Erev. Rabbi Yehuda's okay, because he holds A, that Mitzvah Slav L'Enos Nidnu, and number two, Ein Ma'arvin El Lidvar Mitzvah. Now the Gemara asks, Elaha, the Omer of Yosef, later on we're going to have a Shita of Yosef, Eimar, Venel, Udvar, Mitzvah, Lemiketanoi, Omer, Lishmaite. Rav Yosef formulated the principle that we only allow you to make an Erev if you are using the Erev for a Dvar Mitzvah. Should we say now that Rav Yosef is, again, trotting on very dangerous ground here, and he really reflects the Das Yochid, the Shita of Yehuda, but the Chacham hold that Ma'arvin, Afilu, Lidvar, Rishus. Yosef, the Kuli Alma. Everybody agrees. Number one, Ein Marvin, El Dvar Mitzvah. Number two, the Kuli Alma, Mitzvah Slav Lehenos Nitnu. So now we have to understand, so why the Chachamim object to this Eruv? Because if the Eruv is Lidvar Mitzvah, and Mitzvah Slav Lehenos Nitnu, he's not benefiting halachically from the Kever, Ba'akom Mifli, Mar Sover came into Konale Eruv, Lo Nichale Lemintere. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the very moment the onset of Shabbos, that's Bein HaShmoshos, the Erev is Chal, after that, he doesn't care what happens to his Erev. The Erev has achieved its goal, and even if the Erev goes up in smoke, he loses absolutely nothing by this. So he doesn't benefit from the Erev except for the fact that, at that split second with the onset of Shabbos, the Erev was Chal for a purpose of Dvar Mitzvah and Mitzvah Slav Le'anos Nitnu. So the Kever is only serving him for the Erev only for that split second. And even though you might say that the Kever is guarding his Erev, so to speak, holding on to his Erev at least for that one moment as he enters into Shabbos, and therefore he's Nena, but that's not a problem because Mitzvah Slav Lehenos Nitnu. And we're holding now that Kuli Amalos Svir Lehu, that Ein Marvin Elu Dvar Rishus. Umar sovereign, what are the Chachamim hold? Nichalei lemintara. He wants the benefit from this Eruv even beyond clinching the Eruv, meaning even after the Bein HaShemoshes has ended with the onset of Shabbos, and now he has an Eruv, and he's allowed to walk 4,000 Amah from his house. The Itzrich Achilei. You know what? He's got Mazon Shtei Sudos for his Eruv, and maybe he'll want to, you know, have access to the Mazon Shtei Sudos. So he's constantly, on a continuous basis, he's Nene from this Eruv. Number one, in order to clinch the Eruv and make it Chal to allow him another 2,000 Amah out of the bounds of the city. But that's Mitzvah Slav Lanos Litnu. But two, he's going to benefit from the Eruv because he may want to eat the Eruv. And therefore the Chachom say, you're not allowed to use an Eruv when the Eruv was set up on a Kever. Rabbi Yehuda is not impressed by this. Rabbi Yehuda says, well, maybe, you know, he might want to one day eat from the two sudos that he has on the kever, but we don't assume that he'll do so. And in fact, he's going to tell us, I'm not going to do so. And therefore, he doesn't benefit from the kever. Now, the Mishnah that we're about to start is a Mishnah that really, in a sense, belongs to Zroim, or shall I say the overlap between Zroim and Masechta Erevin. And there are certain points in the chronological sequence in which the Zroim are prohibited, you're not allowed to eat them, and that's usually called Tevel. So that's before the Afrosh of Trumas and Maisros. And again, we're talking now about Eretz Yisrael. The fruits grow in Eretz Yisrael. He has to be Mafresh, number one, Truma Gedola, give it to the Kohen. Even the most minimal amount is sufficient according to the Torah law. The Chacham say he has to give 1/40th if he wants to give B'ayin Yofeh, 1/50th B'ayin Beninis, 1/60th B'ayin Ra. And then after he takes off Truma, he has to be Mafresh Masa Rishon, and that's given to the Levi. That's Chulin. That has no Din of Kedusha like Truma does. And then from the Masa Rishon, which is given over to the Levi has to give 1/10th of the Masa that he received as Trumas Masa. And all this goes on the first year of the Shemitah cycle, the second, the fourth, and the fifth. And just 1 second. And I'm sorry. And then what I meant to say is first, second, fourth, and fifth, we have to add another Meiser, which is called a Meiser Sheni. That has to be eaten in Yerushalayim. And then there's a case where the Rabbanon require you to be Mafresh Maaser, and it's Tevel the Rabbanon, that's called Tmai, that means when you buy Tvua from an Amor. So let's just start the Mishnah. And the Mishnah says, Ma'arvin B'Tmai. Now, again, our principle is that an Erev has to be suitable for Achila, it's Mazon Shtei Sudos, how is he allowed to eat Tmai? The Rabbanon made an Iser called Tmai. And if you bought the Tvua from an Amor, you're not allowed to eat it without being Mafresh Maaser. And you can't be Mafresh Maaser on Shabbos because of the Iser Shvus that prohibits Hafreshes Maaser on Shabbos. So that's going to be the sugya that we're going to pick up right away. But first, let's finish the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Maaser Rishon Shenitlo Trumaso. It means you gave the Maaser Rishon over to the Levi. The Levi already gave 1/10, which is Trumas Maaser, to the Kohen. So why would we have to have a Mishnah to tell me that that's a valid Eruv? I mean, it's Heter Gomur. And the Gemara is going to pick that up. Maaser Sheni Vegdish and Niftu. Again, these are categories of cases where after Pidyon, it's Chulin, and certainly you could use it for an Eruv. So we don't know what the Mishnah is coming to me. If a Kohen and Bechala, and a Kohen could set up an Eruv with Chala, it means this was after Afroshas Chala Min HaIsa, and it was given to the Kohen, it has the same status as Truma. And even though maybe Yisrael would not be allowed to eat this Chala, but I mean, for sure, but that has nothing to do, because here the Ma'ariv was a Kohen. And the Mishnah excludes the following categories. These are all cases of Tevel. Tevel is Asur, and therefore it cannot be a valid Eruv. The Gemara said, Tmai holo chazilei. How could the Mishnah validate an Eruv with Tmai? After all, an Eruv is also Bachila. And the Gemara answers, Midi, Migu, Diboy, Mafkele, Linisev, Avioni, Vechazule, Hashtanami, Chazule. The halacha is that Tmai is mutter for two categories of people. Number one, for an Ani, he's a poor person, and it means he has less than mazon shtei sudos. And then we have the chayalim, the Jewish soldiers who are away from their homes, and we allow them to eat tamai. So the Gemara is saying that although this person who's setting up the Erev is not an Ani, he's not poor, but he could become poor. He has the potential to become poor. And he could declare that all his property is Hefker, and he'd become an Ani, he'd be allowed to eat this Demai, is Hashanami Chazile. In other words, for the kashrus of an Erev, we need just a theoretical possibility that this food could be raw, it could be suitable and edible for him. Like we discussed earlier, if you remember, about 2 days ago, in the sugya of Nedarim, and we said that something that's osur b'neder, even though it's osur b'achil, he's not allowed to eat it, but nevertheless, he could be shoel on his neder, he could be matir his neder. So that potential makes it into a valid Erev. Here too, the potential is that he could become an ani. Tisnan, we have a mission in Dvai in the third pack, machines aniyim Dvai. We're going to allow the aniyim to eat Dvai. And now we turn to Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Beis Pesach Sanya. These are the soldiers of Malchei Yisrael. And the Yerushalmi, by the way, has another pshat over here, that even if the soldiers are non-Jews, but since the Jews have to feed them by virtue of the decree and the edict of the local government, we're allowed to feed them Dmai. That's the Yerushalmi. But the simple pshat, as we accept the Bavli, is that Dmai means that these Chayalim are Jewish Chayalim, we're allowed to feed them Dmai. And Rav Huna now tells us that this Mishnah that codifies the heter of Dmai for Aniyim and for Chayalim, that's a machlok shim beisil beit shamay om Rav Huna, Tana we learned in Ebraisa beit shamay omrim, ein machilus aniyim Dmai, beisil omrim machilus aniyim Dmai. Now the Mishnah continues, says, Maser Rishon Shenitla Trumasa. Is you're allowed to be Ma'arev? So the Gemara asks Pshita. Once the Levi took off the Trumas Maser, it's Chulin Gmurim. Because again, we're talking about Maser. Maser is Chulin. Everybody's allowed to eat it. What would be the Havamina that this Eruv would not be valid? Lotzricha Shekdimo Bishibolim. So now we're going to have to spend a little bit of time to explain what Hikdimo Bishibolim means. According to the Torah law, the halacha of Trumas of Maestros and that requirement, that obligation, applies after what's called digun. Digun means after winnowing. So you have the process of harvesting. And then after you harvest it, you throw it up to the wind, so the wind will blow away the chaff. And immediately after that process comes to its fruition, you're chayav in what's called truma. And in sequence, the first thing you have to do is to give the kohen his due, which is truma gedola. And the Torah calls truma gedola reishis in Dvarim Yudches, to tell you that the first thing that you do after digun is you give truma to the kohen. What's left, let's say he gave 2%, that's called Ayin Beinonis. He's left now with 98%. And from that 98%, he takes 9.8%, a little bit less than 10, 9.8 to give to the Levi as Maser. Now, what happened here is, the Levi got his Maser before the Truma was separated and given to the Kohen. So he got 10% of 100 instead of 10% of 9.8. Of 98 out of 100, I should say, right? So instead of getting 10, he got 1/10 of 98. He got 9.8. So the lady feels a little bit left out. He'd rather get his full 10. So he was mocked in Vishibolet. And somehow the Yisrael and the Levi came to some sort of a mutual agreement, and the Levi got his maser before the truma was taken out. That's called Hikdimo. Hikdimo means he gave the maser to the Levi before he was meant to do so, meaning before he gave the truma gedola to the Kohen. And now the Mishnah wants to ask whether or not the Levi, with his maser, is able to set up an Eruv. what happened? Nitla mimenu trumas masa. The Levi comes home. He's got 10. And he gives 1/10. 1 out of 10 he gives to the Kohen. But lo nitla mimenu truma gedola. But this food stuff, which is the 9 out of 10 that remains after the Levi gave that 10th to the Kohen, never was subject to Hafrashas Truma Gedola. Neither in the hands of the Yisrael, because again, the Levi took it before the Truma was separated, nor in the hands of the Levi. Because all the Levi did was he gave Trumas Maaser, which is one tenth, but he didn't give Truma Gedola. And the Mishnah tells us that nevertheless, the Erev is valid and he's allowed to eat whatever maaser he has, because the maaser is potter from Truma Gedola. So in effect, what happened was we cut out the Kohen from his Truma Gedola. Again, he'll get his Trumas Maaser, but he won't get his Truma Gedola. That 2% of the original harvest in the hands of the Yisrael who gave a Maaser to the Levi before he took off Truma. Uki Rabbi Avo, Omar Reish Lakish, Rabbi Avo said the name Reish Lakish, the Omar Rabbi Avo, Omar Reish Lakish, Maaser Rishrek Dima Vashibolim, Potami Truma Gedola. In other words, the Torah obligates Truma Gedola in the hands of the Yisrael. Once the Maaser was given over to the Levi, there's no Chiv Truma Gedola. Shenema, how do we derive this? In the Parsha Maaser Rishon, by Midbar Perek Yilches, I'll read the entire pasuk. It says, "Ve'el alavim to daber yamart alehem kisekhu me'es b'nei Yisrael samaser asher nasati lachem me'itom v'nachlaschem v'harimosem mimenu trumas Hashem maser min amaser." The Torah stipulates that when the maser is given over to the Levi, then he, the Levi, is obligated to set aside trumas maser. That's called maser min amaser. And the Torah went out of its way to tell you that that is the exhaustive obligation of the Levi. There's nothing beyond that. Masim and Amaser, Amartilcha, Velo Gedola, Velo Truma Gedola, Utrumas Masim and Amaser. You don't have to give both Truma Gedola and Trumas Masim and Amaser. We could say, again, I don't mean this literally, but we could say as if the Trumas Maser is going to swallow up within it the Truma Gedola. But the bottom line is, based on this drasha, the conclusion of Reish Lakish is, I meant to say, that the Levi is not chayav in Truma Gedola. Why? Because Ikdimo b'shibolim. And therefore it's a valid Eruv, and that's the Chiddush of that Mishnah, Malei Rav Papa Labaye, Hochi afilu ikdimo b'kri. Why do you tell me that the halacha here of cutting out the Kohen from Truma Gedola only applies in the case of Hikdimo b'Shibolim? Shibolim meaning after the whole process was done. And it means Natal Tchilas Maaser Rishon B'Od Atur b'Shibolim. Shibolim means that this was before Meruach. Meruach, we said, was winnowing. And since this process took place in the case of Hikdimo b'Shibolim, before we get to Hikdimo b'Kri, before the Chiyuv Masa, because the Chiyuv Truma, because the Chiyuv Truma depends and is engendered by Digun, by Meruach, and this was before Meruach, that's called Shibolim. Shibolim means pure stalks of wheat, or any of the five grains, meaning that's all you have, the stalks of grain in their natural form. So Rav Papa now asks, why do you limit this halacha to a case? And that's how you interpret our mission of Hikdimo b'Shibolim. What about Hikdimo b'Kri? What about after Meruach? And there already was a Chi of Trumas HaMasros. But nevertheless, the Torah says, Maser min HaMaser, Velo Maser, Truma min HaMaser, Velo Truma, Utrumas Maser min HaMaser. So if the Torah is excluding Truma in this case, because Hikdimo, because the Levi got his Maser, that should apply even if this whole process took place, Hikdimo, cutting out the Kohen, after it reached the state of Meruah. Omalei, Sabai responds to Rav Papa, Lechom Akra, the Torah says with regard to the Chiyuv of the Levi, to give Trumas Maser in that same parashah, Bamidbar Yud Ches, it says, Mikol Masro Seichem Torimu Eis Kol Trumas Hashem. And there's an extra word in this pasuk, Kol. And that Kol comes as a ribu to tell you that the Levi is chayev in two Trumos. Not just one Truma, which is Trumas Maser, but even in Truma Gedola. So now we have a funny kind of contradiction. On the one hand, we had the pasuk that says, "Vari bosam imenu trumas Hashem maser ben amaser," only one truma, to the exclusion of truma gedola. On the other hand, we have this pasuk mikol maser sechem torimu, to include even an additional truma to the trumas maser, and that's truma gedola, and the levi has to give two trumos. So Abai says, you know what? We're going to split these two psukim into two cases. Two different scenarios. In the case of Ikdimo B'Shibolim, we're going to apply the mute. And we're going to say that the Levi is not chayav in Truma Gedola. In the case of Ikdimo B'Kri, which is after Meruach, we're going to apply the kol. And we're going to be Marbe a Truma Gedola. So Gemara asks to my Rois, what's your logical, compelling logic to divide up and reconcile these two psukim, the miut and the ribui, in that way? And the answer is, hi idgin, v'hai lo idgin. In the case where there already was meruach, that's called ikdimo b'kri, idgan, it's already after digun, and the tvuah has a shame dagon. And once the tvuah has a shame dagon, there's a chalos chiv truma gedola. And therefore, the dagon itself now, these grains, become what's called tevel l'truma. And once they're tevel l'truma, somebody has to be mafresh truma gedola. And if it's not the Yisrael, then let it be the Levi. But high in the case of ikdimo b'shibolim, where you have just simply the stalks of grains in their natural form, that's even before digun, before meruach, lo idgin, and therefore there never was a chiyuv truma, and therefore there never was never generated a shein tevel in this tvua. Now he gave maser to the Levi, who's ikdimo b'shibolim, and now the Torah says you're potter from truma. We go on in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says maser shein v'ekdishin nifdu, you can be ma'ariv. So the Gemara asks, Pshita, this is obvious. Lo tzricha, shenosen es hakerev, lo nosen es hachomesh. So now we have a case of pidyon, hegdesh, or pinyon, maaser sheni. The Torah tells us in Vayikra Chavav, v'im ga'ol yigal ish es, ish mi masro, we're talking about maaser sheni, is chamishoso Yosef olav. You have to add another 20%. That's the tax for enjoying the opportunity and benefiting from the possibility of pidyon. It's a pidyon tax of 20%. And even if he's poder hegdesh, he has to add a chomesh. And this person that the Mishnah is describing, although he was poder the hegdesh or the maaser sheni, but nevertheless he did not add the chomesh. Kamashmal, and the Mishnah tells me a big chiddush, the ein hachomesh miyake. That as far as removing the shame, Kedushas Maser, or Kedushas Hegdesh, the pigeon is chal, and there's a separate Chovas Gavra to dig into his pocket to pay the Chomesh. When he'll pay the Chomesh, whenever he gets around to it, he has to pay the Chomesh. But as far as the Tvu itself is concerned, the Tvu itself was redeemed. It's no longer as the chal, the Kedusha of Hegdesh or Maser Sheni, and therefore it's Chulin. Hence, the Eruv is a valid Eruv. Then the Mishnah says, have a lo b'tevel. You cannot, now we're in the second part of the Mishnah. The Mishnah is now in the Sefer telling us what is excluded and undermines the validity of the Eruv. It's tevel. Pshita. We know that an Eruv has to be roi l'achilas adam. And here it's not roi l'achilas adam. Although, I wouldn't say it's so pshita after all. He could be masakin it. And he could be mafreshit, bein hashmoshes of Leil Shabbos. But now we're holding like the Chachamim sheet against Rebbe, that kol masha gozru rabbanon, gozru bein hashmoshes. So bein hashmoshes, when the Erev is chal, he has no possibility, according to the legalities, of a legitimate afrosha, because the Isra afrosha is chal already at that point. Now, if we have time, I want to talk to you about a Tosfos. And this Tosis is back on Daf Lamed, and it sheds a whole nother light on this Gemara. But we're learning now the simple pshat in the Gemara. And if you're interested in a little lumdus, then we'll take a look at Tosis back on Daf Lamed. So the Gemara asks now, if there's no possibility of doing Afrasha, because Bein HaShmoshos, with the onset of Shabbos, when the Erev is Chal, he's not allowed to be Mafrish, then certainly it's not Roy Lachila. So it's stuck with the question, Pshita Lo Tzricha, but Tevel, Tovel, Min Rabbonin, Kagon, Shizra, Oh, Bi Otzit, She'eno, Naku. We have two types of flower pots. We have a flower pot that's perforated, and we have a flower pot that's not perforated, that's called Eno Nakuv, which means that the nutrients that have to come from the ground into the soil that's in the flower pot from which something is growing is going to have to go through the bottom part of this klicheres, of this earthenware, and it's not considered mechuba lekarka, and therefore any chiyuv of trumas ha-maisros in grains that are growing in an otzit she'enokov is only midrabanan. So on one level, you could say that the rice, it's not tevel, it's an otzit she'enu nokuv, and therefore on a Torah level, it's mutabachila, and it's roi for an eruv. No, the Mishnah says, you need something that's mutabachila lamaisa before. And if there's an isa derabbanan that prevents you and prohibits you from eating it, then it's not a mazon shtei sudos that's roi lachila for a valid eruv. V'lova maisa rishon shlo nitla trumaso, once again, if the Levi received his maser, but he hasn't yet separated one-tenth of his maser as Trumas maser to give to the Kohen, then it certainly is Tevel Pshita. Lo tzricha shekdimo bekri. The chiddush of the Mishnah is that maybe we could cut out Tevel. We can completely circumvent Tevel. And how? Because the Levi got his maser before the Kohen got his truma, and maybe when the Levi gets his maser, the Torah says he's potur from truma gedola. But it was ikdimo bekri. The Mishnah tells me that once there was meruach, the shame tevel is chal in the tvua, and the Levi, if he gets his maser too early, will have to be mafresh not only truma's maser but even truma gedola. Is nitlo mimenu trumas maser velo nitlo mimenu truma gedola. The Levi gave his trumas maser, but he did not give the truma gedola to the Kohen. Is mal de sema. If not for this Mishnah, I would have said kida amar le Rav Papa Abaye, like this far that we had a little bit above in Rav Papa's question to Abaye, and Rav Papa thought that the same din of hikdimo b'shibalm should apply to hikdimo b'kri. And we can cut out the Kohen and the Shem Tevel for Truma Gedola in Hikdimo if the Levi gets his Truma, his Maser first. Kamash Malon, the Mishnah wants to teach us, Kiddushani Le, like Abaye responded to Rav Papa, that there's a fundamental difference between Hikdimo B'Shibolim and Hikdimo B'Kri. In the case of Hikdimo B'shibolim, where there never was a chiyuv truma samasros, meaning the chiyuv truma never emerged because there was no digun. That's called ikdimo b'shibolim in the tfu in its natural state. And there, if the truma gedola was never a chiyuv that emerged, so the Torah says that there's no separate chiyuv truma gedola on this tfu when the Levi gets his maser. But in the case of Ikdimo Bekri, it means that immediately after Meruach and the Shem Dagon was Chal, the Digun was generated a Shem Tevel, is therefore, even if the Levi gets his Trumas, his maser Rishon first, he still has an obligation to give to the Kohen not only Trumas maser, but even Truma Gedola, and therefore it's Tevel, and the Mishnah says the Eruv is invalid. The lo maser shein ve'egdish lo niftu pshita, if there was no pigeon, and you're not allowed to eat it outside of Yerushalayim without pigeon, so certainly it's not a valid eruv. Lo tzricha she'pada'an, v'lo pada'an kilchasa. What's the case? What would be a case where he was poda his maser sheni or his hegdish, and it was not really the right way to do pigeon, and you might think, well, you know what? Maybe we'll let it get away with it. No, we're not going to let it get away with it. We're going to completely invalidate that pigeon. And what's the case is Maaseh Shebedo al Gabi Asimon. We have something called an Asimon. If you've been to Israel, you know, for a long time, you remember the word Asimon. Asimon was a metal coin that looked, well, I shouldn't say looked, because that's not a good word to use here, but it had the qualities of a regular ma'a, which is an official currency that's recognized by the government of Kesef, of silver. But in this case, it wasn't minted. It didn't have the picture of the queen on it. So it was before Tavu Bo Tsuras Matbea. And although there are certain vendors who will accept an Asimon as payment, so out in the marketplace, some people will accept it. It's like, if I can give an example today, let's say you had a ripped shekel, let's say a 20 shekel big that was ripped, almost completely ripped. So some vendors will take it and they'll put on a piece of cellular tape and they'll accept it. But it might not be legal tender. So now we're talking about an asimon that's not legal tender. Rachmona Omar, and when the Torah describes the pidyon ma'asasheni in Parshas Re'eh, it says, v'nasata ba'kesef, ba'kosef, v'tsarta ha'kesef bi'odecha. And the Torah added an extra word, v'tsarta, to teach me that you need, in this pidyon ma'asasheni, kesef sheyesh olav tsura. Tsura means it's got the imprint of the queen. Or Hegdesh Chil al Gabi Karka, the Torah says in the parsha of Hegdesh and Pidyon Hegdesh, it says Rachmon Amar v'nasana kesef v'kom lo, and the pasuk here tells you that it's got to be kom lo, meaning it has to be something that's movable, as opposed to Karka, and that's exactly what our Mishnah wants to tell us, that this pidyon, whether it be the pidyon of Maaseh Sheni with an asimon, whether it be the pidyon of Hegdesh with Karka, when he tried to transfer the Kedusha from the Hegdesh over to his Karka, in both these cases the pidyon is not valid, it still has the Shem Hegdesh, it's Osur Banoah, and it cannot serve as a valid Eruv. And this leads us to the Mishnah on the bottom of Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Beis. Now first, by introduction, we have to say there are two ways of setting up an Eruv Tchumen. One is called Eruv Baragla. That means if a person has the opportunity, has the time on his hands to personally set up his Eruv, and he walks 2,000 Amah out of the city, and once he stands there, he's Kona Shvisa there without having to set up an Eruv. Meaning he doesn't have to put down a pas, a piece of bread, or Muslim Shtei Sudos, I should say, he can go back to his home and he has already set up an Eruv. That's called Eruv Baraglav. If, on the other hand, so again, when he goes out there, he makes a declaration, he says, Shvisisi b'makom zeh, I hereby declare this is where I'm being Shoves on Shabbos. However, the Rabbanu wanted to make it a little easier, and there's certain people who don't have the opportunity, especially on a very busy Erev Shabbos, to go out there and be Kona Shvisa Baraglov. So what they did was they had an alternative, secondary method of setting up an Erev Tchumen with Mazon Shtei Sudos, and then he could send it with a Shliach. He doesn't have to personally go out there. He appoints someone, and we'll see who that someone is, that's the subject of our Mishnah, to go out there, 2,000 Amah, and set up the Erev on his behalf. So the Mishnah says, "Hasholech eruva biyad cheres shota v'katan." We'll skip a few words for a second. Eino eruv. If he wants to avail himself of the possibility of a shlichus instead of being ma'ariv baraglov, but the only person he has available to set up the eruv on his behalf is either a cheres, who's a deaf mute. Did you hear that, Rabosai? Just kidding. A deaf mute shota is a person who has one of four simone shtus. And by the way, this is probably not at all a reflection of his IQ level. It has to do with emotional instability, never. and mental health, or the lack of mental health, or a katan, is then in all those cases the Erev is not chal. You need a gadol to set up the Erev. That's the law of an Erev. Now we have another case. Another case of an invalid Erev, where he sets it up, someone who denies the whole entity of the Issur Tchumin. He really believes that there's no need for an Erev. He's only doing it because he's paid, or he's doing it as a friend, for his favor for his friend. Maybe he's a tzedoki, he doesn't believe in Torah Shebaal Peh. Is in all these cases ain't no Erev, but v'im amar li adam acher lekablo mimenu, if he sends the Erev with a cheresh shot of a katan or mishen a mod of Erev, and that person, that cheresh, etc., is now going to transfer the mazon shtei sudas over to a valid person who's going to set up the Erev, then the Erev is okay. So in other words, if the Cheresh Shot V'Katan are creating the Erev, that's invalid. But if the Cheresh Shot V'Katan are only serving as like a pigeon carrier, then that's fine. The Gemara says, I don't understand V'Katan lo. You can't set up an Erev through a Katan. V'Amar Avhuna, Rav Huna says with regard to Erev Chatzeros, and we want to make an equation here to Erev Tchumen, is Katan Govesa Erev? The Katan is allowed to go. You have many families that share a common courtyard. You have to set up an Erev to allow the people to carry out into the Chatzer. And you have to collect a pas from every one of the Dayorim. And you're allowed to send the Katan to do this collection for you. Lokasha, kan be Erev Tchumen, ve kan be Erev Chatzeros. You should not make this equation between Erev Tchumen and Erev Chatzeros. In the case of Erev Tchumen, you have to be Konesh Shvisa. And a katan cannot be Konesh Shvisa. It's a quasi kind of a kinyan. It's not a full-fledged kinyan in Dinei Choshen Mishpat, but it is a kinyan, nevertheless. However, in Erev Chatzeros, we don't need the katan or anyone who collects the Erev from the various Bnei HaChatzu to make a kinyan. The Erev is made automatically once the pas belongs to the Dayori HaChatzer, and therefore the katan can certainly be the sort of like a pigeon carrier, but in a different sense, he's the collector of the Erev. He's the tax collector. He goes around collecting the Erev from each one of the Bnei HaChatzer. The Mishnah says, O biad mishena modav Erev, man, who is this person that's not modav Erev? Omer Rav Chisda Kusai. He's one of the Kusim. Now the Kusim were Goyim, and at the time that Sanherev, the king of Ashur of Assyria, when he came up from a place called Kusa, and this was in the area of Shomron, the cities of Shomron, and this area was under Jewish sovereignty, and Sanherev then sent the Jews into Golos, but in any event, there were Arayos, there were lions that were killing the enemy, and many of the Goyim were so afraid of the Jewish power, Halavai today, right, they started being misguided. And there's a big machlokus in the Gemara Kedushin Ayin Hey whether that Gerus is valid or not. Is that called Geri Emes, that even though they were motivated by fear, nevertheless they accepted the Torah, and they have the status of Yisrael? Or shall we say that their Gerus is not Gerus, because they only did it because of fear? And if we don't recognize their Gerus, then they have a din of a non-Jew. And the Gemara establishes that at the time, at least at the time of the Gemara, the Kusim started worshipping idols, and therefore the Rabbanim made a gzera that even if you hold Geri Emesheim, they're considered like Goyim, and therefore the Mishnah tells us that's called Misha Eina Moda Be'eru. And the Gemara now says that in the Mishnah, im amar li acher lekablo menu areza eruv, that if he sends the eruv, for example, with a katan, but he tells the katan to pass it on to a gadol, and the gadol is actually going to set up the eruv, that's valid. So Gemara asks, v'lechush dilma lo mamtile. Maybe the katan is very nice that you sent it with a katan, but the katan doesn't have reliability. Is he going to actually pass on, as he's meant to, the Erev to a Gadol, so the Gadol could set up as a Shliach for the Bala Erev? And the Gemara answers, Kida Omar Rav Chizda bi Omed Vero Ehu, the Bala Bayis sent the Katan as a Shliach, but he can still see, you know, he's got his binoculars, and he sees that the Katan actually delivers the Erev over to the Gadol. So Chinami bi Omed Vero Ehu. So we're going to see that Rav Chizda said it, made his comment in the context of a different brisa, which we're going to see later on, and we're going to apply that same ukimta to our Mishnah. Gemara says, "V'leichas dimelo shakel." Okay, you saw with your binoculars that the katan actually delivered the eruv over to the gadol, but on the other hand, how do you know that the Gadol actually made the actually fulfilled the Shlichus and set up the Erev? Kedomer Rav Yechiel, this is one of the most famous principles in Shlichus, Chazaka Shliach Osa Shlichuso. Rav Yechiel, in another context, said that we always rely on a Shliach that he can fulfill, and he did in fact fulfill his Shlichus. So let's say you sent a Shliach, you know, to be Mekadosh Anisha, be Megarish Anisha, you could assume he fulfilled the Shlichus. Hachanami here too, in our Mishnah, Chazaka Shliach Osa Shlichuso. And since he, the Ma'arev, saw that the child delivered the Erev into the hands of the Gadol, he could assume that the Gadol did what he had to do, he fulfilled the Shlichus, and he set up the Erev properly. The Gemara asks, Ve'heichit ma'ad Rav Chizda Rav Yechiel, in what context did Rav Yechizda make his statement and Rav Yechiel respect his? Ahoy, on this price of the Sanya, we have a price that says, Nisan no. He gave the pass of the Erev Tchum and Lepil. He put it on top of an elephant. Ve'holicho, and the peel moved. He transported the Eruv of the Baal Bayis to the place where the Baal Bayis wanted to be Konesh Shvisa. Leko, for he sent it with a monkey. I feel like I'm in South Africa over here. Ve'olicho, and now the kof, the monkey, did what he was supposed to do, and he took the Eruv and he put it down. Ein ze Eruv, this is not Konesh Shvisa. But im amar li acher lekabli menu, if he commanded someone who's out there 2,000 hours away to receive from the elephant or from the monkey this Eruv, Hare's Eruv, then the Eruv is valid. V'dimelo mamtile. How do we know that the elephant or the monkey is actually to deliver the pas to that person? And over Rav Chizda be omed viro ehu. The Yisrael, the Ma'ariv, is holding on to a pair of binoculars. V'dimelo makabale minei omer Rav Yechiel chazoka shliach osa shlichuso. Amar Rav Nachman. Now this initiates an entire sugya which we'll study in Mitzvah Shem tomorrow. Be shel Torah with didim that are doraisa ein omrim chazok shliach osa shlichu. So we cannot rely on a shliach that he would definitely fulfill a shlichus until we see it with our own eyes. However, on top of Lamed Beis, Amar Aleph be didim shel sofrim, when it comes to a takonas chachamim, then we apply the principle of Chazaka shliach osa shlichus. Rav Sheshes Omar, echad zevi echad zev, chazaka shliach osa shlichus. Even with regard to a doraisa, we could rely on shliach osa shlichus. Now we have 1 or 2 minutes left. I'll just mention a tosvis. This is kind of a lumdis. This tosvis is on Daf Lamed Amid Beis. And it's the end of the Tosis, the second Tosis on Lamed Amid Beis, Dibra Maskeva Lifrosh. And Tosis says that, why is it that the Mishnah that we just learned today disqualifies Tevel for an Eruv? Tosis is bothered by this because the Gemara Daf Lamed establishes that a Yisrael who sets up an Eruv with Truma, even according to Sumchus, it could be it's a valid Eruv, we have to go through the various Shitas, because he could be Matir his Afrosha, he could go through a process of Hatoras, Hafroshas Truma, meaning Hataras Nidor. And yet Tevel is excluded. V'yesh lomar, this is about five lines up before the end of Tosfos Maskevel Lifrosh, di'eino moel masharoy l'sakno, the theoretical possibility that he could be masakin the truma by being shoel, is only meaningful el b'mini l'chazi hashto l'shum adam. In the case of truma, that the Kohen could eat the truma, so there is someone on the face of the earth who could eat this truma, then we're going to apply the principle of efshol esakno. And we're going to validate this Eruv even for Yisrael. However, in the case of Tevel, there's no one on the face of the earth who can eat Tevel. And therefore, Efshal Asakno is not going to be a method of validating the Eruv. Vitei that I'll prove it to you, the Amaliel, Ein Ma'arav Mekdeshos. We have a principle called no Eruv with Hegdesh. Now, Hegdesh is also by Noah, but Efshal Lichalei, you could be Shol on Hegdesh. But the answer is because Hegdesh is also to everyone on the face of the earth, and therefore we're not going to apply the principle of Efshar L'sakno. I have here a quote, a long quote, we don't have time for it, of the Sfas Emes, who's one of the outstanding commentaries on Moadim, on Moed, and he doesn't understand this Tosfos. He says it makes no sense. What difference does it make if there's Efshar L'sakno, and that gives you the theoretical possibility that you could be misak in it, then why do you need that it's mutal l'shum adam? Even if it's also to everybody, efshel sakto should be meaningful and should salvage the eruv. So I, as a Talmud of the Brisket Derech, which I got from my Rebbe, would like to take a stab at explaining this Tosis. Tosis holds that efshel sakno is not going to help you when you have a chefta di sura. If it's a chefta di sura, it's mufka by its very nature, according to the laws of Erevin, from being a kosher Erev. But if you have what's called an isur gavra, like take, for example, tamai. Tamai is an isur gavra. There's nothing inherently wrong. Rovav amiyaris ma'asrin heim. But the Torah says, you are an usher, you shouldn't eat this tamai without being mafresh trumas ma'aser. Go ahead and be mafresh. Don't eat it without hafrosh. An ani is allowed to eat it. That's an isur gavra. There's no isur inherent in the chefta, therefore it's not mufka from Toras Erevin. And all we need is efshel esakno. Like, for example, the case of Dmai Li Osher, where he could be mafkir his nechosin. Or, for example, in the case of Truma. Truma is mutal lekohanim, also lezarim. So it's basically an isur gavra. And if it's an isur gavra, then even an Erev of Truma for Yisrael could be valid because we're going to say, well, Efshel Asakno. He could be Shoel on the Truma. So the Efshel Asakno is a way of indicating that it's an Isur Gavra, says Tosfos. But if you have an Isur, which is universal, and no one on the face of the globe is allowed to enjoy it, then by definition, that's an Isur Chefta, and it's Mufka from Erevin, and it's disqualified, and you cannot apply the principle of Efshel Asakno. Efshel Asakno is just a way of saying that this Isur is on the Gavra, and the Gavra himself could sideswipe and avoid, you know, tiptoe through the tulips as far as this Isur is concerned. He could do a theoretical tikkun. But that's because the Isur is not inherent in the Cheftz, it's an Isur Gavra. So then Efshel Asakno plays a very important role, and it clinches the validity of the Erev. But if you have something that's an Isur Gavra, I'm sorry, it's an Isur Chefta, because every single Gavra in the world is Osur. And if every single Gavra in the world is Osur, that's indicative of the fact that there's something inherently disqualified and prohibited in the Chefta, then Efshel Asakno is not going to work. It's an Isur Chefta, which is Mufka, which is completely excluded from the validity of an Eruv. So we're here on Daf Lamed Beis, Amud Aleph, which Amir Hashem is going to be the Daf for tomorrow.